Welcome to Living Interfaith, Year 4. It was an interesting summer. After the article appeared in the New York Times, there were a lot of responses. Happily, most responses have been very positive. Some, not. But I must tell you that it is not only the positive, but the passionate positive responses that truly warm the heart and remind me, and I hope all of us, why it is we founded this church, this sacred circle, in the first place. It is, if you will, the call of interfaith. Humanity, or at least a good portion of humanity, wants to rise above the hatred and division that have so enveloped our past. We seek to rise above the disrespect that we have flung at one another for so many generations, centuries, millennia. We recognize that our spiritual paths have called us to love and compassion. And yet humanity's fixation on the differences in our paths has instead led to hate, intolerance, and isolation. At Living Interfaith, we do not ignore our differences. This is not an ostrich community. Nor is interfaith an application of the six-blade ninja blender with 1,000 watts of pulverizing power, taking all of our spiritual paths and smashing them into one great spiritual smoothie. No. Rather, we honor and respect our diverse spiritual paths. We celebrate our paths with one another, not to convert or convince, but to share. And it is both gratifying and a tad frustrating to hear from people all over the country and Canada and even beyond who say, "This is what we've been looking for. Help us." Help us. We're a small church. Look around, folks. We're a small church. Being a pathfinder is exciting, but it can also be a tad frustrating, not to mention a bit daunting. But I am here today to remind all of us, including myself, that what we do is important. It is important not only for us, as Living Interfaith gives us the wonderful gift of a sacred space to come together, but important quite literally also for people around this country and around the world. This year, our website has received over 80,000 hits. 20,000 just in the past 2 months since the article. Our first 3 years have been about establishing our own solid foundation. A part of year 4, I believe, is reaching out to assist others who are interested in interfaith to establish their foundations as well. A part of this is our reformatted newsletter. And yes, your patience as well as your suggestions will be appreciated as we work out the kinks. Another part is our effort to create an interfaith curriculum, as described in detail in our newsletter, which I'm sure everyone has read. This curriculum, once created, will provide guidelines for both spiritual grounding and for teaching the next generation about respect for our diverse spiritual paths and how to talk about spiritual matters without being defensive or aggressive. This won't be the last time you hear about it. We have embarked upon our first great fundraising effort in order to create this new paradigm for teaching our young, and will need help. But even more important than creating a curriculum for future generations, the safe space for sharing our deepest spiritual selves that we have created here can, and I believe must, be replicated around the country and indeed around the globe. It may, and I hope will, be replicated in a multitude of differing ways, with differing approaches, but always, always with the goal of creating safe space for folks to share and to learn about each other. The call of interfaith is the call of a new paradigm. Some would pretend that there are no differences between us, but that is pretense. The differences are there, and they are real. The new paradigm of interfaith does not dissolve our differences. It does not make them go away. Rather, it invites us to celebrate, respect, and honor our differences as we work together to create the world of love, compassion, and community that all of our spiritual paths call us to. Not that we always listen. But that is the call. That is the call. To love, to act with compassion, and in community. And it is time to answer that call, not as Christians or humanists, not as Muslims or Buddhists, not as Baha'i or pagans, not as Hindus or Jews, but as human beings, as members of the human family. The call of interfaith is the call of a new paradigm. Some, from each and every of our spiritual paths, believe that there is and can be only one right answer to the sacred, and their life's work has been the search for that one right answer. Some, from each and every of our spiritual paths, believe that theirs is the one right answer. They have the answer. The answer. And if you don't agree with them, by definition, you're wrong. This is the paradigm for dealing with the sacred upon which humanity has based its faith relations for thousands of years. The paradigm that interfaith calls us to stand on and to build on is the paradigm that states that what we believe is important, but what is paramount is how we act on those beliefs. Interfaith teaches us that the sacred has called to us at different times and in different cultures. The wording is different because the times were different and the cultures were different. Yet the call has always been the same. Over and over again, the same. Love, compassion, community. Interfaith challenges us to answer that call to love and to stop hating, dividing, and even killing each other over the wording of it. It is an important call. It is a hugely important call. It has been gratifying to be here working with you to answer that call, and it has been gratifying to hear from so many people around the country and the continent for whom the call resonates. Which brings me to some of the folks who contacted me after the article, expressing their disdain, disapproval, and indignation over the very idea of interfaith. I say this to you with a smile. But these are serious questions. And I think it is best to respond to them with respect, not ridicule, even when the respect has clearly not been mutual. Most, but not all, of the negative responses have been from a branch of the Christian community. I say a branch because it is always important to remember that there is much more to the Christian tradition than any one branch. I feel privileged to number among my friends, dear friends, a Catholic priest, a Methodist minister, a Baptist minister, and a Presbyterian minister, as well as many Christians who are not clergy, all of whom get interfaith and have been hugely supportive. Still, from this vocal branch of Christianity have come two general categories of questions. I want to share them with you with this caution. Sometimes these questions are truly asked as questions. And in case sometime you are asked, I thought it might be helpful to share some possible answers. But sometimes, even most times, while framed as a question, these are pointed in-your-face assaults on interfaith. In that case, my strong suggestion is that we just walk away. Discussing faith can be beautiful and has real value. Arguing faith is something in which interfaith is just not interested. That said, one of the questions stems from interfaith's embrace of all spiritual paths that seek love, compassion, and community. Sometimes a person's hearing of this stops after the words, all spiritual paths. I've been asked from time to time, so, would you embrace a religion that preaches human sacrifice? And if you don't, then the whole idea of interfaith is a lie, isn't it? You don't practice what you preach. Ha! Again, most of the time, this is not a good faith question. Pun intended. But sometimes people truly don't understand. So it's important to be clear that interfaith, as a faith, embraces all spiritual paths that seek to live a life of love, compassion, and community. And also again, what is crucial to interfaith is not the path you walk, but how you walk your path. Regardless of which spiritual path you profess, do you as a human being seek to live a life of love, compassion, and in community? If you do, welcome. Whatever your spiritual path, welcome. And if not, the path of human sacrifice, not welcome. This is not part of the interfaith community. The second general category of questions is from this branch of the community, of the Christian community, is based on Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. What's interesting, of course, is that I just spoke English, and Jesus didn't. But leaving translations aside, most of the time this is brought up as a challenge. Indeed, one person wrote to me stating, are you calling Jesus a liar? I don't think this person was interested in dialogue. But occasionally it is brought up as a real question from a Christian who would like to embrace interfaith, but feels constricted by this saying from Jesus. It is to that person that I would offer this answer. This quote is from the Gospel of John, 14:6. It is found nowhere else. Here's the thing. John is the last of the Gospels to be written, and the most poetic. One question to ask yourself is, if this is not poetry, if Jesus is making such a clear and definitive statement that he's it, his is the only way, and you can't reach God except through Jesus, how is it that Matthew, Mark, and Luke all missed it? Indeed, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, what you will read is that the great commandment is to love. To love God and to love your neighbor. You seek eternal life? Love. Not believe. Love. It may be, then, that John is offering less of a definitive theological statement and more of a poetic offering of truth. That Jesus is indeed the way because Jesus is teaching us to love. You want to reach God? Become the embodiment of love. That indeed is how many Christian theologians interpret this passage of John. But again, and then I'll leave the subject, I would urge all of us not to engage in theological arguments. If you are entering into a discussion with someone, ask yourself this. Is my motivation to convert or convince? Or is my motivation to share? If it's the former, I'd suggest passing. Sometimes we ask ourselves, when faced with a fundamentalist, and fundamentalists come in all stripes, including humanist, how does this happen? How do people get to this my way or the highway point of view? There are, of course, many reasons, and we need to be understanding of that. But I'd like to offer up one very human reason. It's said that the two hardest words in the English language are, I'm sorry. I would like to suggest that while these may very well be the two hardest words in the English language, the three hardest words are, I don't know. Particularly for those of us who relish being in control, the words, I don't know, can be truly frightening. Uncertainty is hard. The challenge, I believe, is to become comfortable with uncertainty. To walk the path of interfaith is to walk the path of theological uncertainty. Interfaith teaches us that while the call to love is universal, the paths to reach that call are hugely diverse. The path that is best for me may not be the best path for you, which can be unsettling. But that does not make your path any less righteous than mine, nor my path any less righteous than yours. Let us then share our paths, share our compassion, and share our uncertainty with love. Amen.